Hotline, Willie D. Mace. 1025-1063, the game in the Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. So, Professor Willie, we have approached this Predator season in two semesters.
That's right.
And your winter break was the All-Star break. You go home, you enjoy some time off. But going into the All-Star break, I think we felt pretty good about the Predators' finals. They failed a test at St. Louis pretty badly. And then
they flagged it.
They flagged it. They had the meeting. They had the parent-teacher conferences. They addressed what was going wrong. They needed to step things up. And then we saw that come to fruition in the final three games before the break. You know, they looked good. Offense was moving. You were getting production from your Duchesnes, from your Forsbergs, from your Johansons, from the guys at the top of the roster. The way that this team is going to win games, when they get production from the top of the roster. So coming back from break, going into the second semester, we thought, okay, how can this Predators team continue the momentum going into the second semester? Because now it is put up or shut up time. Every single game matters for the Predators. From now until the trade deadline in less than a month, from now until the end of the season, now have 33 games left in the season, and the Predators are going to have to win a majority of these games if they want to see the playoffs. And they didn't. You and I were talking about this yesterday, Willie. The Predators couldn't afford to come back from the break slow. The Predators couldn't afford to kind of ease into the second semester. And that's exactly what we saw from the Predators last night. It was a clunker last night. It was brutal. Fell 5-1 to the Vegas Golden Knights. Predators had a season-low 17 shots on goal. And I believe through two periods, it was 6 shots on goal.
Correct.
It was just offensively brutal. You know, turned the puck over. Didn't give UC Saros a ton of help. It was bad.
It was bad. It was.
I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, Professor Willie, I had no choice but to give him the F.
Yeah.
There's no question. They're up and down the lineup.
You giving Fs out?
I mean, it was an F.
It was an F.
And they know it, right? Uh-huh. I think, you know, if you ask them what was their grade, I think they would give themselves an F. They knew it. Why does that happen? I don't know. Like, that's one where I think everybody's got to go, like, you know what they did when they went on to the break. They said, look, we got to pick it up where we left off. Man, we're feeling good. We talked a lot about how it was trending well. They'd won the last three. They were 12-5-2 in the last 19. They were 19-10-5 in the last 34. You know, they're steadily trending in the right direction. Looking at what they've got to do, they've got to be at that level. You know, if they went to that, if they had the exact same next 34, 19-10-5, that would put them right there, I think, to get into the playoffs. So you do the math, right? That's what we tried to do, lay out what it's got to be. So there's not a lot of room for any more dips. Fortunately, that counts only as one loss and not like five, because it seemed like because it's so disappointing to have that happen. I'm sure they all said the right things. They tried to do the right thing. So why does that happen? I don't know why that happens in sports, but that was an extreme dud. And look at the other one, the other team playing last night, Vegas. Mm-hmm. Couldn't do anything right going into the break. One win in their previous nine. They were 1-5-2. In the eight games leading up, couldn't score a goal, couldn't do anything right, and they come out, they're ready to play, and they basically take the game over by the end of the first period and never really let the Predators back in the game. So, look, like we talked about the day after that St. Louis game, they got to wear it, right? The only thing you can hope for is that this is a wake-up call, and you're going to say, well, why does it take that? There's no choice. There's nothing they can do about the clunker last night. All they can do is try to come back today and tomorrow in preparation. They don't play again until Saturday, so they got to wear this until Saturday, right? They don't play again for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know, D-Mace, as a player, would you rather just jump back in there and play another game tonight, or are you glad you got a couple more days to sort of work out and get back in sync? Because they were discombobulated. Really, from the start, they come out, they score a goal early, 5 minutes in. Mm-hmm. You're thinking, okay, let's build on that, and then just the wires
it was
were
like,
crossed.
Bang, bang, bang.
The wires were crossed. They weren't together. The line changes weren't quick. The passes weren't crisp. They turned the puck over. They put themselves in bad position, and that they couldn't get anything going.
It was as if they were playing. They all were playing an individual sport, and nobody was on the same page. It's like playing, I guess, doubles in tennis, and your partner is totally on a different page than you are. You know, you're supposed to play up at the front, but you're in the back with me. It's like, what are you doing? And it just seemed like that was what was going on with the Nashville Predators. It was seemed like no one was on the same page. Yes, they get an early goal, but then after that, it just seemed like Vegas just it was just their game. They were quicker to the puck. They were quicker on ice. Seemed like they had everything going. And both teams had the same amount of time off. It's not like, okay, well.
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, well, Vegas, you know, Preds had 10 days off and Vegas, you know, only had two or something like that. And they had been playing. No, both of these teams had an opportunity to rest and then get back on the ice. But Vegas, and it's unfortunate because it happened at home.
Yeah. And they'd won. Nashville had won five straight at home. They were playing their best hockey at home going into the break, and then you have that happen. So it's hard to explain.
I don't know,
how that happens.
I don't know how you can come off a break knowing where you're at in a season, knowing after we've had this heart to heart amongst our players. Then after that, we come out, we play. You know, play with some passion, some enthusiasm. We play with a sense of urgency. Everybody seemed to be on the same page. From that to in a week and a half, somewhere around there, you come back and it's like y'all never played together. Like y'all never had that talk, you know, a week and a half ago. There had to be a sense of when you walk into that building on game day, like, okay, we got to go. Like this is everybody needs to be on the same page, and it seems like they all walked into the arena from different exits, meaning entrances. They all walked in from different entrances and just came on the ice and never talked to each other.
They were still in Cabo.
It didn't look like a team that had literally just come from Cabo, right? Yeah. But that wasn't the case. They got back. They had enough time to go spend their time and wherever they went, right? And then ramp back up. They had two practices. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's no excuse. There's no excuses for that. So that's again, what was disappointing is you're going to make some mistakes. Like, you're going to be a little rusty. You're going to have some plays that don't go right when you haven't played together in a game for 11 days. But they were missing on so many levels. It didn't get better as the game went along. There wasn't, like you said, the urgency of a team that needs to be urgent, right? That as well as they play going into the break, like we were saying, they're still going up the hill, right? They're still out of the playoffs trying to get into the playoffs. So it didn't look like a team that was desperate to me, and that better change on Saturday. There needs to be a response on Saturday, and then they come back for three more home games. If you look at the schedule, there's room in this stretch before the trade deadline to make some there's an opportunity to make some progress. You're playing some teams you can beat. You got space between some games. Right now, knock on wood, they're relatively healthy. They're missing Carrier, but you know teams are going to be missing players, right? Vegas was playing without their captain, Mark Stone.
Right.
They got the job done last night. So there needs to be a response on Saturday. You need to see a more spirited effort. If you lose on a bad bounce or you run into a good goalie but you played well, you can live with a loss like that. But last night, that was one where you're shaking your head going, okay, this has got to change. We need to have a response to this.
It was bad.
Yeah.
I mean, six shots through two periods is...
Six shots through two, and then there was about, 8 to 10 minutes passed in the third where they only had added a couple of more shots.
Right.
Like, they got to 17 late because they pulled the goalie and they got a power play. They got some shots very late in the game. But, I mean, Mattias Ekholm did the interview. I give a guy credit for doing an interview after a game like that because you got to own up to it. He said, look, six shots through two periods, that ain't going to cut it. Like, he knows it. He said, look, there's not one area. That's just one where nothing went right. We got to go back to the drawing board and get this stuff corrected.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to, and you're correct, because I was going to, you put up something interesting, Willie, a stat, and, you know, I've never seen this stat, and I think it would be, you know, good for our viewers to, I mean, our listeners to, for you to explain it. It was, you know, the shots on goal, how many they missed, how many were blocked.
Right.
But it ultimately ended up with 17 shots directly on goal, but they you would think they had more opportunities than that, but yeah. just didn't
That's
capitalize.
A big stat. Yeah. So let's come back and talk about that, because that has been a theme. When they struggled early, that was a problem, but it has to do with the, you know, when you shoot, when it's an attempted shot, mm-hmm. what's the result of that shot? Is it on goal? Does it get blocked, or does it miss the net? And so when you're has to do with the quality of shots you're getting. So let's talk about on the other side, because last night that was very, very everything was deficient, but that was probably number one, I think, on the offensive side of things.
Yeah, that theme and another theme that I've kind of followed along with this team as well that I want to get into coming up next. I want to get your thoughts as well, 615-737-1025. Speaking of the Predators, you can join 1025 1063 The Game this Saturday at 3rd and Home, located at 919 3rd Avenue North in Germantown, for a Preds watch party as the Preds take on the Philadelphia Flyers at 11:30 a.m. Come watch the game, get some Preds swag, and also enter to win tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. 1025 1063 The Game.
A sense of flatten. I mean, I know you got the first goal, early goal, but was there a flatness in general?
No, I thought we got off to a good start, and then we got the lead, and then, you know, I think where it started really in the first was we wanted to play a skill game when there was no time and space. I think when you go back in the first period after that, a lot of turnovers, a lot of east-west plays, and the plays weren't there, you know, and that caused them to be able to transition back, and you know, we did a little bit better job in the second period. You know, but, you know, we weren't, when we were in the offensive zone, we weren't competitive enough to be able to get over pucks and sustain offense. And, you know, to me, it really was the mindset and our puck play early in the game. And then I also think from a competitive standpoint, we weren't at the level that you need to be to give yourself a chance to win a game.
There you go. That was John Hines after the game last night. Not even nearly where you wanted to be at a competitive level. Again, Preds fall to the Vegas Golden Knights 5-1 last night. Season low shots on goal, 17, 6 shots through 2 periods. It was a slow one. They were sluggish on the ice last night. But D-Mason, Willie, you were discussing a trend with the Predators at the net.
Yeah, well, what John Hines said there, I think, is probably the overall disappointment, right? Just competitive. You and me are battling for the puck. Who wins this battle? Mm-hmm. That was not in the favor of the Predators last night. So that's where it all starts, right? You gotta have that battle level. Then there's the execution. We're trying to move the puck up the ice. We got to be crisp with our passes. We got to know where each other's supposed to be. We turn it over. We put ourselves in a bad position for offense back the other way. So those are two things. And so these are all the layers to it. And John Hines does not show up his team, right? And even he's pretty even keeled. Even when they win, he's not, you know, blowing smoke a whole lot. He's usually pretty. That is angry John Hines there, and you can tell there's smoke inside. He doesn't really wear it on his sleeve.
You think so?
Oh, big time.
Oh, I didn't get that vibe.
Absolutely. Barry Trotz was like that too. Very just much more fiery behind the scenes than what you see on the podium for sure.
But I don't. I mean, if he is angry, he should be.
Yeah,
I mean, some
coaches will do that. Some coaches will light into their teams publicly more than others. John Hines really doesn't do that. Now, behind the scenes, that will be a different story. But to get to the thing you brought up, Derek, in the last thing. So let's say now you're getting the puck up the ice. You're in position to make a play. You attempt to shoot. What happens as a result of that shot? So there's three things that can happen. How you score a shot attempt, right? One is the shot is on goal. Mm-hmm. So either it goes in, or the goalie has to make a save. So that's the best kind of shot, right? The shot's on goal. The second one is it gets blocked. Now, Vegas is the number one shot-blocking team in the league. So you know going in that Vegas is, the way they play, they're going to back it up a little bit. They have big, wide defensemen. They're going to block some shots. So that's not ideal, but a block shot could bounce off somebody and go right to one of our guys and put it in, right, if we're playing against Vegas. So that's a skill for them. They have something to do with it. And then the third shot is the miss shot, right? And you could have one that misses by an inch, and it could hit the post. Mm-hmm. So it could hit both posts, and that's a miss shot. That's not a shot on goal. Then there's other ones that miss the net entirely. And so you want to try, with all the types of attempts, at even strength, you should get over 50% of your, in a perfect, if you're getting the right kind of looks. And I'm oversimplifying it a little bit because there's a lot of different quality types of shots. There's a breakaway, there's a two-on-one, there's, You know, there's just throwing it into a pile of bodies and seeing if it could bounce the right way, try to tip it, all of these things. But at the end of the day, you should be getting over 50% of your shot attempts on net. Last night, Nashville was 32%, right? And that's the we showed a shot chart on our broadcast to sort of illustrate where the problem was, right? So where you're shooting from has a lot to do with it, but also, are you getting the puck on net? There were some times last night where they actually had the opening, right? They have a look. It's a two-on-one, or we're feeding the puck where we want to feed it from low to high. Here comes the shot. But if you miss the net, you have no chance of it going in, right? Or if it's two-on-one and you flub the shot or you shoot it, the goalie doesn't have to make a save, right? These are things where it's execution, it's sharpness, it's conversion. Like, convert when you have a chance. Matt Duchene's goal, 5 minutes in, that looks exactly like how this team was playing more. It was a sharp series of passes, boom, 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 one-timer, net's open, boom. That's good execution. But from there on out, every time they created a look like that, it didn't seem like they were getting the shot that they wanted to get. And when the team struggled early in the season, I think that was a big issue. They have improved in that area, but it was a little bit of – there was obviously a regression in that last night. What? So think about, like, if I have 50 shot attempts in a game, then I need to have, you know, on a good night, 30, 32. You want to get over 50% of those on the net. Make the goalie make a save. Create rebounds. Get second chances. I'm making it sort of general so – you know, people can understand. Like, if I throw you 10 passes, D-Mace, in a game, you know, I need you to, like, a good – the type of pass has a lot to do with it. But, you know, the higher conversion rate we have, right, the better chances you are of winning.
Yeah, because if you look at it from a receiver standpoint, you know, they have – they say a guy, you know, has 200 passes thrown to him. They're not breaking down sort of like – hockey does. They're not breaking down, well, was it this a catchable pass? Was it tip? Was it this? Did they?
Yeah.
No, they're
Is it
just
a short
saying,
screen?
Yeah,
Is it a
they're
long
just
long?
Saying, hey, listen, he had the ball thrown to him 200 times and he only caught 60% of those passes. Well, if you break it down even more, the percentages might be higher because it was a tip pass or the defensive back knocked it down. Or the quarterback just overthrew him, but it was in his direction. So it's called. It's considered, hey, it was a pass thrown to you. It was in your direction. So that was an opportunity or a missed opportunity for you to catch a pass. Well, they're not breaking all of that down. They're just breaking down, okay, 200 passes you was attempted. You know, you caught X amount. It equaled up to either 50%, 30%, 60% of the passes thrown your way you caught. And a lot of times it's not really an indication of, you know, the catchable passes. Whereas, you know, in hockey, they're breaking it. That was the first time I had seen that, where they're breaking it all down. I didn't know that if I shot it on net and it missed the net, that's not a shot on goal.
That's right. Right. You can hit the post.
Yeah.
And it's not a shot on goal, even though that's about as close as you can come to scoring without scoring.
Yeah.
So there's different ways that coaches and teams track you know, what they're getting offensively and what they're giving up. So another way of doing it is just simple scoring chances, right? Where we have the puck, we get a two-on-one, we miss the net. Well, that's still a scoring chance. We created a good opportunity. We didn't convert. And then you might only give up one goal in the game, but you're saying, man, we gave up too many scoring chances. So both were true last night. Not enough scoring chances for, way too many scoring chances against. And, you know, UC Soros can't be Superman every night and bail you out. Like, in the first period, they gave up a ton of odd man rushes. Roman Josi had an absolute nightmare. He never does this, but they win the faceoff. They have an offensive zone faceoff, so that's right in front of Vegas's goalie. That's a great opportunity to score. Nashville wins the faceoff right back to Roman Josi. Best player they got. Inside the blue line, time to attack. For whatever reason, the puck just got away from him. And then he has the bad dream. He's trying to get, well, I'll just go back and get it. Roman Josi's one of the fastest skaters going. He kind of stumbles. He dives. He tries to just push it back so maybe Soros can get it. And he doesn't get it. And it's a breakaway. Uh-huh. And they come down and score. Like, that just doesn't ever happen. But it happened last night. It happened to their best player. The guy who's normally about as reliable as it gets. He's the best at his position in the world, or one of the top five guys at his position. So it all kind of piled up. snowballed last night.
And it was just overall just bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you can break it down and look at it all, but overall it just wasn't good enough. And to your point, sometimes you get those chances and sometimes the luck goes your way, and sometimes you just are so close and you don't win a game and you're like, man, that was a hard, tough, hard-fought game, a tough game. It didn't go our way, but we know we fought hard. We know we put ourselves in a position to win that game. And the Predators didn't last night. And no, not one single game is going to define the rest of your season. Not one single game is going to define what you do at the trade deadline. But I think it's more so looking at a very macro perspective of a trend that I'm seeing with this team, or a theme that I'm seeing with this team, of you have a clunker. You have a bad game like you had with St. Louis a few weeks ago. And then you come back and then you fix some things and the offense looks better and things are clicking and you might get some help from the bottom of the roster, you know, the Tommy Novaks or the Uso Parsonens of the roster. And then you come back and you have a great game from Matt Duchene or a great game from Ryan Johansson, which is what you need to win games. And then you go back and you have another clunker. And it's a constant trend of three steps back, two steps forward. And it's looking at what this team has to do in order to make the playoffs. And David Poile sat down with the Tennessean and talks about how much of a priority it is of his to make the playoffs and how important it is of his to make the playoffs and how proud he is of this team for being a playoff team in the last few years. And those are all important things. But this team's going to have to win 20 to 25 of their next games.
Not 25, I don't think. But 20 is about the right number, I think. 20 out of 33.
So 20 and 13 in the next, for the rest of the season. Mm. The way that this trend
maybe
is going,
19,
that's going to be tough.
It depends on how many. Well, I mean, but that's what they did in the previous 34. They were 19, 10, and 5. So the variable is how many of your losses are overtime losses where you get a point. And that, it not only is important for you, but how many other teams play those three-point games. Mm-hmm. So there's points for both teams.
Help. Right.
You need maybe a little bit of help there. So it ends up being like you got to win about 6 for 10. You know, 6 out of every 10 going in, and some of those losses have to be overtime losses. Right. I think they're capable of doing that, but obviously if they have too many efforts like that last night, I mean, they couldn't beat a single team in the league. They'll lose to anybody playing like that last night. So you have to have that be the exception and not the rule.
I think there's only so many meetings you can have as well. The meeting.
Well, that's true. The meeting thing worked. It was the perfect timing for it, and it got the right response. But that's a great point. You can't have a meeting five times because it'll lose its effect, right? It has to be the guys playing the right way as a consistent rule.
And looking at how much of a priority it is for David Poile to make the playoffs, and I know it is, and it's important to this franchise. And how the Predators have been playing so far this season and what they're going to have to do in order to make the playoffs, it's going to be a tough bid. It is. And what we saw last night at least wasn't encouraging. Tron Davenport will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on Tim Kelly. He'll get his thoughts on the new Cleveland-like model with the Titans, apparently, for Albert Breer. We'll get into that coming up next. It's Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
I'll let you try my Wu-Tang style.
Hey, it's Love Week on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by A Moment's Peace Day Salon and Spa in Cool Springs. You can tune into Robbie and Rex Road tomorrow morning between 6 and 9 a.m. for details on how you could win a $100 gift card to A Moment's Peace Day Salon and Spa in Cool Springs and qualify for a chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. Tron Davenport joins us now. TD, the new news of the day, because I want to get your thoughts on Tim Kelly, the entire offensive coaching staff. But the new news of the day from Albert Breer is that the Titans are hiring Packers personnel and football administration exec, quite a lengthy title, Chad Brinker as their new assistant general manager. And then Albert Breer cites that he will be part of a, quote, Cleveland-like model under the new general manager, Rand Carthon. One, what the heck does that mean? And two, what do you know about Chad Brinker?
I don't know much about Chad Brinker, to be honest with you, but I will say the Cleveland-like model, what he's referring to is the analytics. And we know when Rand Carthon spoke about Elijah Mitchell and the importance that they put on analytics. You remember with John Robinson, he said, I am the analytics department. It was a different perspective, a different approach, a more classical approach. But, you know, when you look at that.
Who is it? There we go.
Somebody had an emergency. I don't know what it was.
Oh, no.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah, it was like an alert to let us know that.
Breaking news.
It's about to go down. No, but when you look at that model, that's more or less what he's talking about, the analytics side of things. And he mentioned Elijah Mitchell as how that's something that yielded a really good player, almost 1,000-yard rusher as a rookie, sixth-round pick. So I think it's a good thing. I think it's going to be a shift from the way things were done before.
And isn't it fair to say, this was reported outside, but as you mentioned, John Robinson really didn't make it a big secret, that the Titans were ranking a lot lower than a lot of teams in how many people they had on staff, how many people that were really paying attention just to the analytics side of things.
Yeah, it was really one person.
Yeah.
It was not John.
Some teams have as many as, I don't know how many now.
Some have a whole staff. Like Baltimore, they have a whole staff of like 5 to 8 people doing analytics. But they still go with the stomach feeling.
Sure. You got to have a blend, right?
Yeah, that's John Harbaugh. He's going to be a coach that's going to go with feel. And I think ultimately if you could find that blend, and the thing is, and you know, right, analytics is nothing but back in the day what we called tendencies.
Yeah.
That's all it is, you know. You get the scouting report, they'll say, hey, look, man, a lot of times on third down, they're going to give you this coverage. Against that coverage, you're going to convert your route to this. That's really all it is, but there's just a bit more formulas and algorithms. But when you could blend the two, I think that's the ultimate mix.
And I think, too, there's two ways of looking at it. Some of the hires the Titans have made, you could look at it one side and say, man, there are a whole lot of cooks in the kitchen here. Mm-hmm. There are a whole lot of ideas going in here. Who has final say? Who's in charge? And then you could look at it and say, there's a lot of new and fresh ideas coming in here. And this is just a new era of Titans football. So now with Chad Brinker coming in, now that we know that it's going to be a true collaboration within the front office, what does that mean for this team? What's the new look going to be like? How does Mike Vrabel's role fit into that, moving from this almost like old school football mentality to kind of a new generation of the Titans?
Well, the thing that's good is they're already used to the collaboration. Just you look at the defensive staff. Jim Schwartz came in and rest assured, he had a heavy input, right? Influence. But it was Shane Bowen's show. And you know Mike Vrabel had a lot to do with it too. So you saw that on defense. I think offensively, there's a heavy collaboration that's going now because you have two new roles that were created, right? The run game analyst, the pass game analyst, but then you have a pass game, pass game coordinator, and then you have an offensive coordinator.
The titles are very confusing.
There's a lot, and that's why I asked Mike Vrabel yesterday about that whole collaboration side of things. And I think when you look at it, it's a lot similar to what I saw the Eagles do. And I know you asked about front office, but I wanted to talk about this with the coaching staff too, because it's very similar to what I saw the Eagles do in 16 and 17. And when you look at that year, in fact, the Philly special, Press Taylor, who was the quarterback's coach, he was in charge of finding trick plays and stuff like novelty plays. He found that from the Bears from the previous year, and he brought it to the Eagles. And then you look at the slant that Zach Ertz caught, that was a collaboration of three different plays. And three different coaches came together for that. Frank Wright, John DeFilippo, and Doug Peterson. They all came – oh, no. Frank Wright, DeFilippo, and Mike Groh, who was the receiver coach. They all came together, took that to – I almost said Harbaugh, bringing all my experience in to Doug Peterson. And with that, he was like, yeah, let's input it. And it was literally a collaboration of 3 to 4 different plays. The motion to set it up, the slant was something that they saw before. Like, it was crazy how they did that. So that's an example of how collaboration can work. I think it's just a matter of everybody checking their ego and just willing to have their own input. Now, you talk about the front office, I think it's going to be the same situation. And that's one of the things that I think is going to be really good about Rand Carthon. He's not a punk. You know what I mean? He's going to stand up to Vrabel, and if they have – and there's the even level of respect. That's the main thing, because you heard Vrabel say that he likes his football acumen or I forget the exact term, but what he's – how he's brought up in football. Mm-hmm. And then you look at Rand Carthon, he said they're cut from the same – you know, the same – they come from the same grain. So there's going to be an equal level of respect there. So I don't think the collaboration is going to be an issue.
Now, TD, with the whole hiring of Tim Kelly, you know, at the beginning, I thought that, you know, bringing Tim Kelly in, this was just an audition. This was because you're not bringing in a guy that young to just be a pass coordinator. He's going to aspire to be an offensive coordinator and then potentially a head coach, because that's the way, that's the path to a head coach. And when they brought him in, I specifically said, this is Todd Downey need to pay attention because his successor is right behind him. And lo and behold, Tim Kelly gets the job. Now, does that, how much do you think that will change the offense, if it changes in at all? I heard what Vrabel said and what he wants to happen, but you know, as the season gets going, you tend to fall back into what you know rather than trying to invent something different.
One of the things that was really interesting to me about that presser is he said that Tim Kelly had a lot to do on first and second downs, and it wasn't just in the passing game. What's the big knock that everybody has on Todd Downing?
Third down.
Well, even before you get the before you get the third down,
second down,
before you get the third, predictability. Always running on first down. I wonder if that was all Todd Downing or if that was Tim Kelly as well, because Mike Vrabel specifically said first and second down. Now, you mentioned third down, and they were, I think it was like 36%, which is like in the bottom 10 of the league. That's one of the areas where Tim Kelly was really strong, despite having a collection of guys in Houston in 2021. You know, so I think that's going to improve. But then you also look at the passing game. Was it 2020? They were fourth in the league in passing. So you go back and you watch – watch a lot of Brandon Cooks in 21, and you'll see him running a lot of those. Like, he's running slot fades. You see him, you know, they play action. They run the bang route with Nico Collins, the bigger receiver, number 12. So you look at that, I think you're going to see more of that, but personnel plays a big role in it, right? There was a stretch last season where they got away from that, but that happened to be when Treylon Burks wasn't there. And to be frank with you, Treylon Burks is pretty much the only guy on that team that you could consistently run that bang route with, and the play action bang route, you know, the slant coming across the middle, he's going to get you the results. The other guys, I don't know if they're going to do that. So I think you're going to see an uptick of that, but it's going to be because of Tim Kelly as well as because of personnel.
Now, with that being said, with the hires on offense, the GM changing, I think it's setting it up for a very interesting offseason with the Tennessee Titans. As far as, I think this is the year where they are going to say, listen, we need to spend the money. We need to spend the money, because I think John was more so of save money. You know, let's get a bang for our buck, but let's save money too. But I think Rand Carthon is like, listen, in order to build a team, we're going to have to spend the money. And with the moves that you made on offense, the hiring within, because ultimately, if this doesn't work with Tim Kelly, we're looking at you not variable, you know, because you hired within. You had a chance to go out and get somebody else, but you chose to hire within, which I have no problem with. I think Kelly's okay. I have no problem with it. But if it doesn't work, then now we look at you. So which means to me, Vrabel's like, listen, we got to go out and spend the money. Now, we got to go out and get players and bring them in.
Yep, playmakers.
Yes.
And bring them in. And that's the thing. You look at this stadium coming in a few years, you can't roll in there with a loser. Like, you have to have things cooking. And what cooks in the NFL? Putting points on the board, right? You look at 2020, they were averaging around 30 points a game under Arthur Smith. The popularity was at an all-time high. And then it rolled into 2021, and, you know, we know what happened in the postseason. But – I think this is the year that they are going to have to spend. You have the cap that has gone up. And then you look at where Rand Carthon came from. I mean, this team, they gave a big deal to a daggone fullback. We talking about Kyle Juszczyk. You know what I mean? You look at the – like, they spent money. San Francisco spent money. They gave $100 million – I hate saying gave. They signed a quarterback to $100-plus million, right? So they – built that success, obviously, through the draft, but also free agency. And I think that's something that they're going to go with here.
Last one for you, TD. Mike Vrabel mentioned how he kept Ryan Tannehill in the loop with the promotion of Tim Kelly. He filled him in. He said Ryan Tannehill was excited about it for next season. What do you think? Is that a statement on Ryan Tannehill being the starter next year? And if so, why doesn't Mike Vrabel just come out and say, hey, Tannehill's our starter?
I really wonder why he doesn't come out and say that, but I don't think it was an accident that he said Tannehill was in the building every day.
Yeah.
That wasn't accidentally. Mike Vrabel is very strategic. He's very intelligent, despite what people may think. You know, he's a very smart person. That was said on purpose.
Calculated.
I think Tannehill is back. I heard Paul Kaharsky this morning say 80%. I say like 85 to 90. I think he's going to be back. So that's a part of the continuity.
Falls in line with my 90. I went 90. Didn't I the other day when we you had the pie? 90. We had the pie. We divvied it up. I went 90.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is, especially with that, more likely than not that Ryan Tannehill's your starter in 2023. TD, appreciate you for hopping in.
For sure, no problem. Appreciate you.
Who's I'm talking to TD this week?
It's just Chris and I, Chris Sanders and I. We're going to just talk it out.
Not just you two. We get the privilege of listening to you two.
There you go.
TD, we appreciate you.
All right.
Thanks for stopping by. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, we'll get into your phones coming up next, 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Unless you have a thought.
Let's go to the phones.
To the phones. The people have spoken. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Justin in Greenbrier texts in, says, Tim Kelly has been a good offensive coordinator in the past. The fact that he's worked with Vrabel in the past is not a knock against either of them. If they work well together, that's great. Kelly deserves a chance to prove what he could have done with this offense. Downing last year showed how inept he was at managing the game and utilizing the players he had no matter the injuries. Let's see what Tim Kelly can do and not count him out before he's done the job. I don't think anybody's counting him out.
I thought we said we don't dislike the hire. We think, hey, it is what it is. Is it a great hire? I don't know. I can't say that it's a great hire because, you know, it wasn't like he, you know, came in with a bunch of fanfare and you know, the offense that he ran in Houston for those 3 years with, you know, the top offense in the National Football League. They had their problems. Yeah, they were able to do some things with Deshaun Watson underneath center. But they still, as a whole, the offensive unit still wasn't in the top tier of the NFL. It wasn't a top five offense, but it's not a bad hire, but to me it is a hire that puts Vrabel, however you look at it, that puts Vrabel in a position where if this thing doesn't work, if this offense doesn't look different, then there's nobody else to point at. We can't point it, even though it's Tim Kelly's job. And I think Tim Kelly would do a good job. If everybody's healthy, they add some players. I think this offseason will be an aggressive offseason by Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel as far as trying to get players, playmakers in here. I think they will be aggressive in trying to do that. Now, will it happen? I don't know. But I think he'd do a good job. But if this offense isn't any better this year, upcoming season, than it was last year, then he has to know that now the heat is on him. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking at Tim Kelly. I'm not looking at the offensive coordinator anymore, and I'm not criticizing the offensive coordinator anymore. All the criticism is pointed directly at the head coach because this is your – like, this is really your hire. You brought this guy in from another place. He sat in the background for a year, and then you elevated him when you had an opportunity to try to go out and get somebody different. No, you said, no, I'm going to elevate from within because some of the, you know, there's some familiarity with him and the players and what we run around. And that's great if it works. If it doesn't work, I ain't bringing up Tim Kelly. I'm bringing up the guy that hired Tim Kelly.
I think when you take a head coaching job, you know, ultimately
exactly,
it's going to come back to you. And I think there's a lot of different ways to build a good coaching staff, a good team. There's more than one way to succeed. And so you have to really have a good eye for the people, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what he seems to fall back on is, look, I know this guy. Mm-hmm. This guy's been around every day. I know what he's about. Arthur Smith was one of those guys, right? He hired Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith had been there on the previous coaching staff. Nobody really – he was not in the forefront at all. You know, he was probably – for those who really paid attention, people knew him as the the FedEx guy. Like, oh, they got a guy from FedEx on there. But he wasn't a well-known guy. Nobody had ever interviewed him or anything. Right. He was a very anonymous member of the coaching staff. And then, boom, here he is, offensive coordinator. Never done it before. There were a lot of people going, interesting choice, right? Well, can this guy do the job? 5 or 6 games into that season? I don't know, man. Can he do it? The next thing you know, he's got a head coaching job because he did such a good job. So there's more than one person, I think, that can be successful. But I think what Mike Vrabel values is I've watched this guy operate every day. I like what he's about. He's done a good job. And so I'm more comfortable going there than somebody that maybe has succeeded on a higher level somewhere else. But I don't know him yet. I don't know him yet. Both could work. But like you said, it's a results-based business, right? So you got to trust yourself because ultimately it's on you as the head coach. Whether if it doesn't work, it's on you.
Well, it's which is great. That's one of a lot of the things that I enjoy with Coach Vrabel. Being a head coach with the Tennessee Titans is that he's in the business of rewarding, like. If you're on my staff, I've known you, whatever, you're doing the things that we ask you to do, you're putting in the time, and we're seeing some fruits of your labor, then I'm more inclined to hire from within. I'm more inclined to promote from within, whether it's Downing, whether it's Pat O'Hara, whether it's Shane Bowen. He's elevated people within that coaching staff because – Like you said, Willie, he's with them every day. He sees the work that they're doing. So he wants to give them an opportunity. You're working hard. There should be some reward to you working hard. So I'm going to elevate you. Now, once you get elevated, it's up to you to keep that position. Mm-hmm. If you can't keep that position, then I'm going to have to remove you from that position and hire someone else. He's done it before, and he's going to continue to do it. He's going to continue to do it. But while doing it, I know he has to understand that there's only so many opportunities I'm going to get at doing this. And if it doesn't work, then ultimately they're going to look at me.
Absolutely. And Mike Vrabel is beloved in this city. Exactly. I know that. And but I don't think that we can look at Mike Vrabel like he doesn't have to win. Mm-hmm. You still have to see results. And to the point, to the texter that we're counting out Tim Kelly, that's not the case at all. And I don't love the hire. I'm not obsessed with the hire. I don't hate the hire. It just simply is what it is. That Mike Vrabel promoted a known commodity within that building, and that's what it is. And I think the critique of promoting from within isn't a critique of Tim Kelly, but rather than the principle of promoting from within. Of it looks from the outside like, are you just continuing to try what hasn't been working and expect different results?
Yeah,
I think you have to have your own ideas. It's so weird, like when we say good hire or bad hire. Most of the time, it's really a hindsight, right?
Give me a couple years.
Right, you can't really know. It's like a recruiting class. Oh, great recruiting class. It grades out well, but we don't really know until 3 or 4 years later when you look back and say, okay, how did that pan out? Great draft grades. Hey, immediately the next day, Titans got a B+ on the draft. Hey, pretty good draft. How do we really know until you look back 4 years later and say, okay, wow, that was a B+. You know what I'm saying? So when we get into, hey, this is a great decision or a bad decision, we're all just speculating. There's different ways to do it. Mike Vrabel to me seems like a foxhole guy. Like he is a former player. He wants guys that he trusts, he knows in the foxhole with him, and he will sink or swim with those guys rather than like there's been a lot of I use college as an example. There's been some times, but I think it might have happened a little bit with Mike Mularkey, where the owner or your boss comes in and says, I don't want to fire you, D-Mace. You're the head coach, but I need you to change your offensive coordinator. I need you to change assistants. Otherwise, you're gone. Some coaches say, I want my foxhole guys. If you don't like that, then I'm not your coach.
I'll move on.
Yes. Others was like, okay, I'll change it. I want to keep my job. Mike Vrabel to me is a guy that would say, you know what, I'm in with my guys or I'm not in. Right?
Yeah. That's what I admire about Vrabel is that, listen, if he's a he's sort of that results-based guy. Like, listen, if you're showing me you're working hard and there's some results from you working hard within the system that we're in and what I'm asking all the coaches to do, that if a position comes up, I'm going to elevate you. And it's been proven. He's elevated people. Now, again, it's going to it can either help you keep your job or it can ultimately get you fired. You know,
that's the business.
Which one do you want to be in? It seems like Vrabel is the, listen, foxhole guy. These are my guys. I'm riding with them, and they ride and die, ride or die.
And something else that Mike Vrabel does all the time is sometimes tell us something without really telling us anything. And I think he struck again. And I'll explain what I mean by that coming up next. And of course, your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 106.3 The Game.